What is going on? Thank you so much for tuning in. It's March 2nd, the 221st edition of the MMA Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. As always, joined by P-Money, Sweet Pappy Jones on Twitter. Pat, what's up?
Jake, we are just hanging. It is a wonderful day over here. Lovely to be back. We had a great event this past weekend and got a great pay-per-view slated for us just a couple days here.
That's right. We had to take a couple weeks off. Apologies for that. But we did have a fun card last weekend in Jeremy Stephens versus Josh Emmett. to be completely frank, we should break that down real quick. To be frank, I had that one picked all wrong. I had Josh Emmett. I thought Emmett would be able to tie him up, kind of clinch him, wear him down, win a decision. But Pat, your boy, the little heathen, Jeremy Stephens, doing work. What did you think of the fight?
Well, Jake, I thought it was a great fight. It was definitely a closely contested fight. The Vegas odds were very close on that one. And Josh Emmett, he came out looking very solid in round one. He dropped Jeremy Stephens. It was a close, tight fight. But then in round two, Jeremy Stephens, he just played his game, and he was able to drop Emmett. It's a savage hook. I don't see a ton of controversy in this win. Just me personally. Again, it could be me being a homer for Jeremy Stephens, but, I mean, the elbows to the back of the head, we see fighters get warnings for all the time, and it just gets brushed off. No one ever mentions anything about that, but now it's like, oh my God, those are illegal elbows. He was hurt really bad from that hook. Those elbows, he probably didn't even notice those. Same with the knee. The knee, I mean, yeah, that was incredibly poorly judged. But again, that did not look like it fazed him compared to the right hand that followed it up and then the elbows. And yeah, there was those shots. You could tell really did not affect him at all compared to how the legal strikes did. So, I mean, those were inconsequential as far as I'm concerned. It was a brutal finish. Jeremy maybe should have let up on the last elbow there. I mean, it was, but again, fight until the referee pulls you off, I suppose. But yeah, devastating. Performance for Jeremy Stephens, riding high.
Yeah, that was a fun overall card, UFC Orlando. You had Mike Perry getting upset by the very live dog, Max Griffin. Brian Kelleher defeating Hinnan Burrell. That Fox main card, we had Iller Latifi win a pretty outstanding first round standing guillotine choke against Ovince St. Preux. Jessica Andrade, I assume, locking up the winner of Rose versus Joanna, defeating Tisha Torres unanimously after this win. I really don't think you can deny her the title fight. Any other thoughts on the goings-on last weekend in Orlando?
Yeah, you know what? It was really was a fantastic card from top to bottom. Marion Renault, I believe, is that how it's pronounced? I want to say there was like a
Marion Renault, I believe. Yeah, I think you got it right.
Marion, I want to say, I don't know. I want to say it was something different than Marion. I don't know. Anyways, she looked great taking out Sarah McMahon, overcame a really tough first round, trapped in the crucifix, rallied back for a solid finish, hurt Sarah McMahon standing, ended up getting the submission on the ground. Great fight between Angela Hill and Marina Moroz. Alan Joe Band versus Ben Sanders. Fantastic scrap. I want to say that one won the fight of the night. Great back and forth. Joe Band with a knockout in the end. Yeah, just great from top to bottom. Ronnie Yaya getting the sub against Russell Tone in round three. Great stuff. Fun times.
Fun times indeed. But we do have to get to this weekend's card in the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, UFC 222. Before we do so, though, did want to talk about a few fights that were slated. First and foremost, a lightweight bout between Edson Barboza and Kevin Lee that I guess is going to headline the UFC's return to Atlantic City, New Jersey on April 21st from Boardwalk Hall. the main event there being Edson Barboza and Kevin Lee, both of whom losing to the two guys who are going to be fighting for the lightweight championship next month. Barboza losing to Khabib Nurmagomedov, Kevin Lee losing to Tony Ferguson. These are still both two very exciting fighters. Stylistically, you know, you would obviously favor Barboza standing up, Lee probably on the ground, more of a threat than Edson, although both of those guys aren't a slouch wherever the fight takes place. I don't know. My first kind of thought here, I'm leaning toward Kevin Lee. What about you? We have a lot of time to, we got about a month and a half. This will be April 21st. Which way is the wind blowing for you for Barboza Lee? Which should be the headliner for this?
That's a great scrap at 155 pounds. For me, I am initially just that's such a striker versus grappler classic matchup there. Typically, I want to lean with the wrestler. I mean, Kevin Lee, he really seems to be putting it all together these days. But Barboza seems like he's been getting better and better as well. Barboza, he's never had an easy fight in his UFC career. And he usually puts on a spectacular performance, too. Man, I don't know. I'd have to say Kevin Lee initially. I don't know. Yeah, I need a little more time to analyze that. But I'll lead with the wrestling early.
And we also have a couple scraps made for UFC 224, which I believe will feature Vitor Belfort versus Lyoto Machida, a fight that, you know, considering as long as both of these guys have been around, it's a wonder the fight has not been made before. I'm going to have Belfort versus Machida, and this is going to be in Rio, so I'm sure the Brazilian fans will be very pumped for that fight. A couple of Brazilian legends. Also, Kelvin Gastelum going down to fight in enemy territory, taking on Jacare Souza at middleweight. What do you think of this fight? This is going to be a lot of fun. This, I mean, really, you've got Yoel now, who is lined up to fight Robert Whittaker again. Rockhold is obviously out of the picture, having just lost. Man, you have Weidman up there. The winner of of this fight is going to be sitting very pretty as far as the middleweight title picture goes. And you would have to say the winner of this fight will either get a title shot or be one fight away from a title shot. Gastelum versus Jacare, UFC 224 in Rio de Janeiro. That'll be May 12th. Looks like a lot of fun. We'll also have Amanda Nunes versus Raquel Pennington as your likely main event there. What do you make of Jacare Gastelum?
Jacare Gastelum, that is a great scrap. Man, this is going to be a tough one for Gastelum. I mean, at 185 pounds, I mean, this is a tough fight for both guys. I mean, Kelvin Gastelum, obviously, he's been doing great things at 185 pounds. It just seems to be one of those things where it's, I don't know, I guess people say they just want a bigger name for him to prove himself and really cement his position at 185 pounds and to get that title shot. You know, he was feeling snubbed that Romero got the interim shot against Luke Rockhold. And this fight certainly will create the next number one contender. I mean, I would imagine it has to for the winner of Romero versus Whittaker 2. But, man, I mean, Jacare, very dangerous. He's got great striking with all of his limbs. His grappling credentials are just out of this world. And he's going to have a fairly good height and reach advantage on Kelvin Gastelum, I want to say, too. So I feel like this is definitely going to be Kelvin Gastelum's toughest test yet. But, you know, he's really shored up his striking. He's got big power himself, and he's a very strong grappler himself. He's going to have that low center of gravity as well, so he very well be able to negate some of the takedowns and some of the grappling of Jacare Souza, and maybe keep it standing, maybe, you know, just make it a dirty kind of fight, keep the pressure on him. Man, this is going to be a great scrap for sure. I think it's going to be fireworks. And I'd say right now, just off the cuff, I kind of feel like I have to give it to Jacare, but I don't know. I may start leaning more towards Gastelum the closer we get to fight time. This is a very intriguing matchup.
Jacare is getting older. I think, you know, I don't think Jacare has come close to falling off yet, but I think Jacare is in the decline. I think Gastelum's still so young. He's still getting better and better. I'm leaning KG. Another fight at UFC 224 that will mean a lot. One weight class up at 205. You got number 2 versus number 3. Glover Teixeira taking on Volkan Ozdemir. Glover coming off a win against Misha Sirkunov after losing to Alex Gustafsson. Volkan just coming off a loss for the title, facing Daniel Cormier. Before, though, he had been on a streak beating OSP, Misha Sirkunov, and Jimmy Manoa. This will be fun. You know, neither of these guys lose unless they're fighting the best of the best. You look at Volkan. His only UFC loss was for the title against DC. You look at Glover, even going back to his title shot against John Jones, his only losses have come to John Jones, Phil Davis, Rumble Johnson, and Alexander Gustafsson, who, speaking of which, he is currently your number one at 205. This fight kind of puts him in a weird spot. I don't know. He doesn't have a fight lined up. I guess he's just waiting for DC maybe after this summer. He was talking shit to Luke Rockhold recently about warning him about not moving up to 205. I saw in a recent news article is thinking about moving up to heavyweight. So I'm not sure what's next for Gus. I think he has a lot of options. But nevertheless, this is 2 versus 3. Ozdemir versus Teixeira. This is a really tough one to call as well. Both of them really kind of sawed through Misha Sirkunov in less than a round. So hard to compare those fights because both of them won so soundly. Oh, man, I like Volkan, I think. Glover very well. I'm not sure if the odds have been posted in this fight. Glover might be a slight favorite just because he has so much more experience now. But I've definitely been impressed seeing what Ozdemir has brought to the table, even in that fight against DC. So I'll take Volkan in this one. Who are you leaning towards?
Jake, I would probably have to say I'm leaning towards Teixeira initially in this one. I just feel like Teixeira, he can have more of a grappling pressure style of game plan that, of course, DC is a whole different level of competitor compared to most. Truly one of the pound-for-pound top fighters in the UFC right now. But Teixeira definitely, obviously a highly ranked light heavyweight competitor for a good cause. And, you know, he definitely brings a lot of pressure, and he's got heavy hands as well. I think he certainly could be a problem for Ozdemir, but Ozdemir himself, you know, he hits like a friggin' freight train, and we've seen Teixeira get caught before, so really nothing's out of the question in this fight. But early, I'd say I think Teixeira will be able to get it done with his style. You know, he can make it ugly. He can make it ugly, and Ozdemir, I don't know if he likes the kind of ugly that Teixeira brings.
That's a very good point. Glover can make a fight ugly and scrappy in a hot second. That's really about it. We had that John Jones stuff come out a day or two ago. Nothing really came of it. He lost his license, which effectively suspends him for a year, but he still hasn't gotten suspension or any of that. Things not looking good for old Johnny Bones. So we will see officially once we get more word on that and actually have something to talk about, we will probably talk about it. UFC 222, let's talk about that. Cyborg versus Kunitskaya. Kunitskaya, sorry. We'll start with the prelims, which I was looking at a lot of fights in the prelims, and I kind of saw a similar theme rolling, which are good fighters coming off losses against other good fighters, fighting up and coming guys to try and get back in the win column. And a lot of these are going to be difficult fights. You have Brian Caraway, who actually was on a pretty good run there, beating Aljamain Sterling and Eddie Wineland, still is on a 2-fight win streak, just hasn't fought in the last 2 years. He's fighting Cody Stamann, actually an underdog to that up-and-comer. We got Mike Pyle, also an underdog, against Zach Ottow. Hector Lombard, he's, I believe, on a 4-fight losing streak. I don't know if he will still be employed by the UFC if he loses to CB Dalloway, who also has been stumbling a little bit lately. John Dodson, who I believe just lost to Marlon Moraes, if I'm not mistaken. That's right. He is going to be taking on Pedro Munhoz. I believe he is a pretty decent favorite. Yeah, minus 170. Beniel DeRush, another guy who I believe in his last fight, in his last two fights, yeah, he lost via flying knee to Edson Barboza and drew with Evan Dunham. So he's looking to get back in the win column there against Alexander Hernandez. He's a big favorite, minus 400. And you have the biggest favorite on the card, Sans Cyborg, who is the biggest favorite, I think, in MMA history. Mackenzie Dern, minus 440, making her UFC debut against Ashley Yoder. One funny thing about Dern, you know, she does have a lot of hype on her. And one thing a lot of people bring up, she, I guess, was born in America, but has two Brazilian parents. And there is a video of her from like 2010, I believe, when she was in high school, and she's speaking with a very California, U.S. accent. Sounds like any other American, you know, girl. But in recent interviews, if you listen to her speak, she sounds like a Brazilian person who speaks Portuguese trying to speak English. She has like this weird kind of accent, which is very curious considering a handful of years ago that she spoke with a perfect, you know, Valley Girl Cali American accent. It is weird. It's very strange to see someone. She does not look Brazilian at all either. She looks very white. And she's speaking with this like Portuguese accent, like she's from Brazil or something. I mean, I guess I understand it. She apparently at home speaks in Portuguese with her parents. Apparently her boyfriend is Portuguese. She said in interviews she thinks in Portuguese when she's, you know, working out. She counts in Portuguese. So I guess I understand the reasoning behind it. I wouldn't call her a faker or anything, but it's just one of the most bizarre things you've seen. You'll probably notice it in any interviews she does. She has a ton of hype behind her. You know, she's won the World Cup in Abu Dhabi a bunch of times, won the ADCC submission championship gold. She's got a lot of credentials as a grappler, and so far in her MMA career, she's 5-0, three of those via submission, including her single fight in Invicta, where she won by armbar. Taking on Ashley Yoder, like I said, a huge favorite. That's going to be the the main fight on the prelim card on, I believe it'll be on Fox Sports 1. Yeah, on Fox Sports 1 there. Your thoughts on this group of prelim fights before we work our way up into the main card?
Yeah, definitely a nice, very solid slate of prelim fights leading into the pay-per-view. As you mentioned, Brian Caraway making his return against the up-and-comer Cody Stamann. Pyle riding off into the sunset, his retirement fight against Zach Ottow. CB Dalloway making a comeback, or trying to at least maintain some kind of consistency there in the octagon, trying to get two in a row against Hector Lombard. Dotson versus Munoz. Now, Dotson, he has actually lost three out of his last four, but is a betting favorite against Pedro Munoz, who is on a 4-5 winning streak. So be very curious to see how that one plays out. Dariush versus Hernandez. Be good to see Dariush back in there. Yeah, definitely a good slate of prelims. Mackenzie Dern, as you mentioned, her much-hyped UFC debut. Definitely some good stuff to get us hyped up for the pay-per-view portion of the card.
And then we work our way up into the main card. Sort of that same theme of good fighters coming off losses, fighting up-and-comers. This fits right into that mold. You have Kat Zingano, who, man, when she lost to Ronda Rousey, got, you know, rushed in, got reversed and put into that armbar with the quickness by Ronda. That fight seems ages ago, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, that was 3 years ago now.
She's fought one time since then, and it was at UFC 200, which was about 2 years ago, and that was a loss to Juliana Pena. So if we're talking about, you know, a win for Kat Zingano, we're going back before the Rousey fight. You know, this is, I believe Vegas sees Kat Zingano as the underdog here to Caitlin Vieira, who is coming in from beating Sarah McMahon back at UFC 215. She's 3-0 in the UFC, also defeating Ashley Evans-Smith and Kelly Fassholes. You know, this is... Kat definitely has the skills to win this fight, but just with all of the ring rust, going up against a 26-year-old Brazilian in Vieira, this is going to be a difficult task. I think if Kat can keep the fight standing, that will bode very, very well for her. But yeah, this is not going to be an easy fight for either one. Another fight, Stefan Struve versus Andrei Arlovsky. This is another really, really interesting one. You have Stefan Struve, who is coming off a loss to Alexander Volkov, taking on Andrei Arlovsky, who was on a 5-fight losing streak to Stipe, Overeem, Barnett, Ngannou, and Marcin Tybura. Finally got back in the winning column against Junior Albini at UFC Fight Night Poirier Pettis last November. The line on this one has Struve being a favorite, and you got to see why. People obviously looking at the age of both guys. You have Andrei Arlovsky, who will be turning 40 next year, definitely on the downslide, taking on a 30-year-old Stefan Struve, who, hey, you know, he definitely has a career peppered with losses, but on that record is a very important W. It's against the current champ, Stipe Miocic. And with a win against Andrei Arlovsky, you know, once you have Cormier and Stipe kind of work their thing out this summer, right now, if you look at the UFC heavyweight rankings, there's really, you know, there is a desire for fresher blood up there. Right now, Stefan Struve is 10th. You got guys like Derek Lewis, Curtis Blaydes, Alexander Volkov up there. So, yeah, I guess the winner of this fight will be looking to throw his hat back in the heavyweight title contention ring. And then Sean O'Malley versus Andre Sukumtat. This will be an interesting fight. Sean O'Malley, he's fun to watch. He's really lanky. He throws these wild spinning head kicks and, you know, these crazy unorthodox, you know, fights and or kicks and punches. And, you know, against guys who aren't really ready for it, they can just get stuck in the mud and get hit. And, you know, Sean wins a lot of these fights where he just kind of confuses the other guy. He took a lot of shots against Terry and Ware, and against a guy like Andre Sukumtat, who really, you know, when he's throwing in the pocket, is pretty heavy-handed. I don't think Sean O'Malley look, I'll put it this way. If he leaves himself open to get hit the same way he did against Tyrion, where he's going to get knocked out, I'm picking Sukum Thot in this one. O'Malley is the underdog, slightly at +110. But, I'm taking Sukum Thot in this one. We can save the main and co-main for their own little topic there. Or Ortega versus Edgar and the Cyborg Kunitskaya. But what do you make of those three fights there on the main card?
Ooh, definitely, definitely some fun stuff. I'm a big Katsingano fan. Always really liked her style. Great striking.
Same.
Very solid wrestling as well. So going to be good to see her back in the octagon. She's got a very tough draw against Caitlin Vieira. Definitely a phenomenal up-and-comer there, so it'll be a very tough fight, but good to see Kat getting back in there. Hopefully she'll be able to step in with some more regularity there. Struve versus Arlovsky. Two guys who have suffered the most knockouts in UFC history are going head-to-head. And they've both given a lot of knockouts. They've both endured a lot of knockouts. I'm predicting a knockout. Who it's going to be by, I have no clue. I'm phenomenally bad at picking Stefan Struve fights. Out of all of his fights in the UFC, I think maybe I've picked one of them right, and I couldn't tell you which one it was. I'm going to pick Arlovsky just for...
So Struve will win.
More likely than not. That's a smart play. I'm saying Arlovsky, so Struve's probably going to take it. And then Sukum Thot versus Sean O'Malley. That should be fireworks either way. I mean, these guys definitely seem inclined to stand and bang. And, man, it was a fun debut for O'Malley against Tyrion Ware. Definitely a crowd pleaser. And Sukum Thot with a great showing last time out against Luke Sanders. I want to say Sukum Thot was the underdog in that fight, but delivered a spectacular TKO finish. So it's going to be a fun battle here. I think this very well could go Sukum Thot's way. I'm probably leaning that way in this one as well, but should be a fun. Fun little display, however that one shakes out.
Indeed, bringing us to the co-main event, which originally was supposed to be the main event back before Max Holloway dropped out of it. We were going to see Holloway versus Edgar. Now for the second time, it's been canceled. First time was because Frankie. This time it's because the champion Max had to back out. He's taking on Brian Ortega. This is going to be an interesting fight in that... Man, Frankie has taken on a lot of opponents, and his game is to take you down and punish you from the top, just brutally punish you. This is going to be the best jiu-jitsu from the bottom he's ever experienced, I believe, and in his entire career. I don't know if he's ever gone against anyone who's such a threat grappling-wise from the bottom. You look at what Brian Ortega has done against multiple opponents, multiple subs. He is dangerous. At the same time, the other way, Brian Ortega hasn't gone up against... Yeah, he's gone up against wrestlers, but not the kind of wrestler who just takes you down. But Frankie is maybe one of the all-time greats at inflicting punishment on the ground. It's Kane-like. He's like a 145 Kane, the way he is able to just get these elbows and punches and just keep you down and suffocated. You're not going to get back up easily against Frank Edgar when he's got the top. So this is, we've seen Frankie pass so many tests. And yeah, he has a few losses to elite guys like Jose Aldo. Brian Ortega could win this, and I think the line is just about right with Ortega being an underdog, but not crazy. I think he's like +150. But we've seen Edgar take on so much elite talent where Ortega, yeah, his win against Cub Swanson was impressive, and he has, breezed past some B-level opponents, which definitely puts him as an elite fighter. but we haven't seen him fight the A-level guys yet. And Frankie's been an A-level guy for years now. I mean, going on, what now, like almost a decade? I mean, Frankie has been around now on the top for 7 or 8 years. So, yeah, I definitely think Brian or Ortega is a part of this new guard of young fighters: Max Holloway, Brian Ortega, Kelvin Gastelum, Cody Garbrandt. These young guys who are going to be, you know, taking over the UFC. But for right now, this is still the Frankie Edgar era, and I have Effie winning this fight just with that suffocating, punishing wrestling from the top.
Well, Jake, I find it hard to disagree with your analysis here. Really, Brian Ortega, he's a fantastic competitor. He's young. He's got so much talent. He's got all the tools in the toolbox. But Frankie Edgar, and of course, I've been known to mark out on Frankie Edgar pretty hard. And, you know, sometimes that may not allow me to see things quite as objectively as I normally try to. But really, his wrestling is just next level. As you mentioned, the pressure that he puts on, which stays the entire fight. His timing is excellent on his shots. He uses his hands very well. He's got great hands to begin with. He's shown he has the power. You know, he can rock you. He can drop you with the hands. The speed leads to power. And, I mean, he's just one of the best there is. I think that Brian Ortega, he's got a very high ceiling. And could he beat Frank Yeager? Yeah, I think he, you know, maybe he could, you know, use the power to stop the takedowns if he, you know, fights at a smart pace. And he's very heavy-handed himself. You know, he's definitely a threat with those hands. So there's a chance there, but yeah, I think Frankie, he's just a little bit above Brian Ortega right now, and I think he's going to be able to use that pressure. He's going to be staying sticky on T-City and peppering him with the ground and pound, and I think he'll get a decision in this one.
Bringing us to the main event. And, you know, it's no rub on Yana Kunitskaya, who is making her UFC debut in this fight. She's fought in Invicta, where she was 1-1 with one no contest. It was a controversial referee no contest with Tanya Evinger, which Evinger won in the rematch. Then Yana won the vacant Invicta Bantamweight Championship by beating Raquel Paalui last year. One thing going in Yana's court is that, you know, she is in Jackson Wink camp, which they just had Holly Holm fight Cyborg, so they probably learned a lot of, you know, things about Cyborg's game. But, man, I can't think of many other reasons why Cyborg isn't going to go through this woman like a buzzsaw. Cyborg, greatest female fighter of all time. You look at her record, it's absolutely terrifying. She, you know, she lost the first fight of her career and then never lost any fight since. 4-0 since joining the UFC. So many first-round finishes on her record. She has killer jiu-jitsu, but is just known for, I mean, just the way she goes through women like a Pride era Vanderlei. Scary to watch. Cyborg, I believe, is the betting-wise biggest favorite of all time in the sport ever. -1750. So that basically means to profit $100, you would almost need to bet $2,000 on her to profit $100. If you bet $175 on Chris Cyborg, your return, your profit with her winning would be $10. Now, on the other side, if you bet $100 on Yana Kunitskaya, you're getting over $1,000 in return. And if anything, I would say maybe bet a buck on her, because just in fighting, I think in the world of fighting, you know, fighting isn't such a sure thing. You have a lot of crazy upsets. That being said, this is one of the most one-sided fights we've seen. This goes in the realm of, I think, that Shevchenko fight. Cyborg just really does not have much competition at 145. You can't really blame the UFC. No one at 35 wants to go up and fight her. She's the best ever. So, yeah, Cyborg on some books is minus 2,000. I've never seen that in MMA before. I've seen it for, like, some boxing, you know, one-sided matches. But, yeah, never in this sport, and especially not in the UFC. So, yeah, Cyborg minus 2,000, crazy shit. She's for sure probably going to win. Yeah, it'll be an anti... This will be a very fun card to watch, but I'm fearing that it'll be an anticlimactic finish to a fun card when we see Cyborg do what we all expect her to.
Yeah, definitely. The main event of this pay-per-view is kind of a foregone conclusion. Cyborg retains against Yana Kunitskaya. Everyone is grateful to Yana for stepping in, and as well as Cyborg, and putting together this championship affair and saving a pay-per-view. And, hey, it'll be fun. Watching Cyborg fight is fun. I mean, who didn't like watching a Mike Tyson fight? To, you know that you're going to see some kind of spectacle. That's what Chris Cyborg brings to the UFC. And she may not be Ronda Rousey or Conor McGregor or, you know, GSP or any of the names that you think of, like, you know, the big money fights. But, man, Cyborg certainly is a big name, and she has been a draw in this sport for probably almost 10 years herself, since her fight with Gina Carano. I mean, that did some big numbers way back when. So it's, you know, people like to see her fight, and again, people always like to see, you know, that steamroller of a fight. It's fun every now and then. And just to put things into perspective, Jake, as you mentioned, with Cyborg being minus 1750, minus 1800 on some sites, for her to win a decision is a plus 600 prop bet. So even just really the bookmakers are saying this fight is not going to the decision here. No one expects it to. But yeah, Jake, you another great analysis there that she does have Jackson Winklejohn on her side. They're the masters of game planning, but there's really not a whole lot you can do against Cyborg. She's just super solid everywhere that the fight goes. And as we saw in her fight against Holly Holm, she's got a good gas tank too. She seems to do fairly well for 25 minutes. So I don't think going the gassing her out route is going to be the most successful in this one. And I think Justino gets out of there pretty early. I'd say it's probably going to be a round one TKO for the main event.
I am thinking the same. Pat, you got anything else for him before we let him go?
Well, you know, Jake, I must say, just to bring up the John Jones thing, just because I had to real quick, this man said in front of the State Athletic Commission that he didn't read the USADA guidelines or some shit like that, and that he had his management do it, and he had his management read it and forge his signature. Fantastic. That is the kind of testimony and defense that gets your license revoked. And, oh my goodness, fun times. What a fun time that was.
What a clown. We will be back next week for the MMA Podcast, episode 222, where we break down UFC 222. It should be a fun card. A lot of stuff down the road. There, you know, I was thinking recently a topic we really could get into on a down week if there's no events to break down. I was thinking, what would the UFC and MMA look like right now if Rafael Dos Anjos didn't get injured right before the Conor McGregor fight? You know, it was scheduled. Rafael Dos Anjos and Conor were going to fight for the lightweight title in Vegas. And Conor was already the champ at 45. He was looking to be the champ in Vegas against Dos Anjos before Dos Anjos ended up losing to Eddie Alvarez and Conor took the belt from Alvarez. We were going to see Conor versus RDA. Instead, RDA gets injured literally in the last minute of the last sparring session of the last practice before he was going to travel to Las Vegas for fight week. So instead, Nate Diaz steps in last minute. We see Conor versus Diaz. I mean, you know, we'll go deep, but I mean, would Nate Diaz be nearly as rich as he is now? Would we have even seen Conor versus Floyd? Who would be the champions at each individual weight class? We'll have time to dive into that maybe. And if you have any other ideas, you know, as far as if something went the other way, say if Ronda actually beat Holly Holm, you know, a lot of interesting rabbit holes I think we could go down. Obviously, we haven't done a lot of interviews in the past, but we do eventually want to get back to that. Check out themmapodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at themmapodcast. Follow our boy P Money on Twitter at Sweet Pappy Jones. We love the shit out of each and every one of you. We'll see you next week. Till then, we love you, and we gone.